Hello, everyone, and welcome to Stutter Talk. This is Chris Constantino. I am here with Seth Teschner and Karen Herring. And today we're going to be having a frank discussion about fluency. Karen Herring is a person who stutters, an SLP, and a doctoral candidate at Michigan State University. She co-hosts the Stutter Talk B-Team and is the chairperson of Friends, the National Association of Young People Who Stutter. Dr. Seth Teschner is a person who stutters, a speech-language pathologist, and a postdoctoral research associate at Michigan State University. Thanks for coming on, both of you.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Chris. I think this will be fun.
Same. I'm excited to be here.
So, just to give the listeners an introduction to what we're going to be talking about, I had the experience recently where I was talking to other people who stutter, and they referred to my stuttering as a mild stutter, with the implication that perhaps I might not know what it was like to stutter more severely. And this rubbed me the wrong way, and I've been thinking about it a lot. And I think it rubbed me the wrong way because I feel I used to stutter much more severely than I do now. And I do think I know what that's like. And it made me realize that in many stuttering circles, we sometimes avoid talking about how fluency might change over time. So for the sake of this conversation, I'd like to make a distinction between what I call spontaneity and what is normally called fluency. Spontaneity is how much you're thinking about your speech and how much physical effort speaking requires. Fluency is simply how often you're stuttering. Generally, I think the narrative is that frequency of stuttering or fluency is outside of our control. If we stutter, we're going to stutter the rest of our lives. But in therapy, we can work on stuttering more easily, with less avoidance, and with more confidence. In other words, we can work on spontaneity, but we can't really work on fluency directly. But I've certainly had the experience that working on my own spontaneity has made me stutter less. I'm more fluent now than I've ever been in the past. And I've not tried to have this happen. It was never my goal, but it's happened nonetheless. And I know I'm not the only one it's happened to. Many stutterers have reported this phenomena. In fact, my mentor, Walt Manning, has barely stuttered for decades, despite having a moderate stutter when he was younger. And I've found myself having difficulty processing these thoughts and trying to understand how to talk about them in a productive way. And so, Karen and Seth, what I want to talk to you about is, have you experienced a change in fluency over time, perhaps with yourself or with any of the clients that you work with? I wanted to talk about what we think this mechanism of action is. Like, why does this happen to us? And why does it seem to happen in some people and not in others? And finally, is this okay to talk about, or will it contribute to people seeking out fluency in unhealthy ways? So why don't we start from the beginning, and we'll start with Karen. Do you think your fluency has changed over time?
Gosh, you just said so many things, Chris.
You can choose just to comment on what I've said.
Okay, yeah, I'd like to do that first.
Yeah.
I think the thing that sort of makes my head spin, first hearing you talk, the idea that being called mild or being labeled as mild, and that triggering and a negative response is such a flip from sort of how I grew up. Like, if I had ever thought growing up that someone would think that my stuttering was mild, and that I would potentially think that that was a bad thing, like that I almost wish that I had stuttered more, I would never believe that. And in the exact same breath, I can't totally relate to that experience because that's not the experience that I have had. I can absolutely see, because I think I do it myself when I see someone who says that they stutter, but in my mind, they're not stuttering enough. Then I do think it, and I shouldn't, but I do. I think it takes away some of the credibility that I think that they have, like that this person couldn't understand because they're fluent most of the time. So it's such an interesting topic, I think. And it's so interesting because I think that if this were happening to someone else and someone else were explaining this to me, I don't know if I would feel the same way because, like, deep in my core, Chris, I know that you understand. So, like, the fact that someone would think that about you, like, just is so wrong. But in the exact same breath, I know that I've judged others because they haven't been uttering enough.
That's an interesting thought, Karen. I wonder, though. I mean, you've known me for, I mean, we've probably known each other over a decade at this point.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've seen me struggling and stuck in a block.
I don't actually know, though. I mean, okay. I don't know, but for some, I don't know.
So I have. He does do this from time to time. I will visually visually corroborate Chris's experience that, yes, sometimes talking is hard for him.
It's funny, before I called both of you, I called a bunch of people in my life, like my parents. I called my in-laws. I call my wife. I've called childhood friends. And I asked them, you know, tell me how you think my speech has changed over time. Just because maybe it's all in my head, right? Like maybe I didn't used to stutter that much. And they all said very similar things that they think I stutter less now than I used to.
Yeah.
And so I don't think it's in my head.
Wait, and Chris, just so I'm clear, the fact that like you're feeling and other people in your life are feeling that you're like overtly stuttering less now, that's not something that you're necessarily trying to do, right? Like you're not using speech tools to try to sound more fluent?
100% not.
Okay. Right? Okay.
I think the main way I've tried to approach my own stuttering is to try to stutter as openly as possible and figure out in the moment that I'm stuttering, what am I doing that's blocking this moment of stuttering from coming out? Like, how can I stutter even more openly, even more openly, even more openly? I mean, I've tried to do fluency shaping in the past when I was in high school or younger, and it did nothing but make me, you know, avoid more or struggle more because I was really trying not to stutter.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so interesting because I certainly like think and believe that sort of the more that you try to be fluent, often the more difficulty you have and the more struggle you have. And I do believe that the more open you are with your stuttering and the less you try to sort of push back, that the easier it is to speak. But saying that it then actually results in more fluent speech still seems like a stretch to me.
I know, and that's actually one of the reasons I asked you on this podcast, because we've had this conversation in the past.
Yeah.
And you were incredulous. And so I thought you'd have interesting insights, maybe.
Yeah. Going back to the thing that you actually asked me, though, I think differentiating between spontaneity and fluency is important, because over time I definitely have seen an increase in my spontaneity. I think about stuttering in the sense of like how my own speech sounds way, way less. Thinking much more about what I want to say and not really thinking about sort of how it's going to come out. And I think my stuttering has changed over time too, in the sense that I don't think, I mean, there's definitely still times that I get really stuck or that I'm having like a particularly hard block. But I would say for the most part, my stuttering doesn't feel as physically hard. But with that said, the amount of stuttering I have still seems the same, if not more at times.
Right. Seth.
Yes.
Can you relate to what Karen's saying?
So first, I like the adjective incredulous to describe a Karen. I think that's that's funny and it fits. But so I think Karen's thoughts have made me rethink some of my own as I was thinking about this whole topic. But I'll try and say what I was originally going to say when you asked these questions. And so in terms of severity, right, like, you know, have I had people approach me who knew how I spoke years ago and say I was less severe or more severe? Yes, absolutely. You know, so I'll give you a quick example. And I think I told you this, Chris, already. But when I graduated from my master's in speech language pathology, I actually went home to Indiana, where I'm from, and I met my old elementary school speech therapist. You know, and I should say this meeting was random because I thought she was well retired at this point. When I told her that, you know, yes, I have become a speech language pathologist and I'm pursuing this career focused in stuttering, the first thing she said was, "Oh, you never stuttered this much when I had you." And it took me completely off guard, because thinking back, I was like, you were like, the therapy we had was purely, you know, fluency shaping. It was just, you know, me trying to avoid moments of stuttering. So like on the one hand, that's kind of insulting that you said that, but two, it also kind of makes sense, right? Because now I'm not trying to fluency shape and avoid moments of stuttering. So I get what she was saying. But you know, the whole severity question is sort of like, it's, you know, sort of on the one hand, it's a little bit ridiculous that, you know, we as clinicians, as outsiders, we try to assign these numbers, these labels that somehow capture, you know, this total experience of living with stuttering. You know, one, I think, because stuttering is so variable, but two, it does change over time. It changes week to week, year to year, decade to decade. Generally, I would say that now, yes, speaking is less hard for me, where I don't struggle as much to say what I want to say the way I want to say it. And when I say struggle, I don't use as much physical tension. You know, I'd also sort of agree with the thought that I don't think about stuttering ahead of time. I don't really have those longer term anticipatory feelings of fear and shame. So I think that contributes to just having more spontaneity, to use your words, so that when I do speak and I stutter, you know, it's less of a blip in the road. I can get through it with less baggage, I guess, right? You know, but I think assigning assigning a severity label to that, I think, is really on the surface kind of insulting, you know, because if you, and I've also tried really hard to think about what a good analogy of this would be. You know, it's sort of like if I had a broken leg and was in a cast, right? And I was trying to do the best I could walking, and someone on the street says, "Seth, you're doing a really good job walking today." Well, one, that doesn't mean a lot, but two, it really doesn't capture the experience that I'm having, right? Like, I'm doing the best I can. Like, thanks for commenting on it. Thanks for labeling it. But really, what good does that really do? I'm not sure that's the best analogy. It's the best I could come up with in the couple days since you sent me this email to the chat about it.
I guess, yeah, I think it's the analogy works in that stuttering is so much more complicated, right, than what the listener is capable of witnessing, but also of like a simplified severity rating would allow for. I think that's why it's helpful to try to break down the experience into constituent parts and talk about those parts individually, because I think they can vary, right? Like, you might, on a particular day, your frequency of stuttering might be down, but when you have a moment of stuttering, you might struggle a lot, or your avoidance might be up, or your shame might be up, or so what have you. And so how does saying moderate stuttering, like, what does that really refer to? What does that really mean?
Right, exactly. You know, and the other thought, you know, sort of related with that is, you know, are we really shooting ourselves in the foot with these sort of just numbers, you know, how we try to assign, you know, because, you know, like, these numbers are not without consequence either, you know, like, when people do therapy, they use these as measures of how effective therapy was. So, you know, are we really measuring the changes that we're making in therapy? Switching to your other question about spontaneity, you know, when you first started talking to me about this word, I sort of wasn't sure what to make of it. Because I think how I originally conceptualized it was in terms of how hard or how effortful speaking really is. But the more I've heard you talk about it, really, I don't think that's quite what you mean. And what I think you mean, and please correct me, we can talk about this. It's almost like the side effect of being just mindful, right? Of just engaging with your life in a way where you're not focusing on either trying not to stutter or trying in a certain way. You're just living your life paying attention to how you walk down the street, right? And when you go to talk, you know, whatever happens, happens, right? Like, you know, so I think that's maybe what you mean. But I think spontaneity captures that. It's just, you know, you're not trying not to stutter. You're not trying to stutter in a certain way. You're just living your life like someone who doesn't stutters would, right?
Yeah, I think that's actually a nice way of putting it. Michael Boyle and I have a project we're working on where we're really trying to flesh out this concept of spontaneity and figure out the best way to measure it. And so we've been talking about definitions a lot. And I think this idea, this description that you had of where your attention is, right, when you're walking, and how I see spontaneity is how much of your attention is ripped away from other things that you're doing to attend to speaking, right? And so that might be because of the physical effort involved in speaking. It might be because of your anticipation, right? You're scanning ahead. You're searching out feared words that might be stuttered on. It might be just feelings and emotions of fear and shame that you're aware of. So how much are you able to speak without having to pull your cognitive resources away from the other things that you're doing?
Right. And I think that makes a lot of sense. If you think about, certainly I think this is a gross generalization, but, one example I've heard, people who do research and do therapy, related to mindfulness, they've used examples of, say your mind is a glass of water. How much water can you, or you have a limited amount of water that you can give to certain tasks and things you're doing, right? And if you're doing lots of things, you're not doing, one thing really well, you're doing lots of things sort of poorly. And AB speech works the same way, where, when we are doing things that's really hurting us in the end, right? Like we're really anticipating, we're ruminating, we're feeling guilt and shame, we're trying to say things in a certain way. Maybe that's actually hurting us, right? And maybe, this also, I think, goes back to what you were saying earlier about, why do we have this paradoxical relationship that really speaking gets easier when we stop trying not to stutter, right? So maybe this is actually how that works, right? Fluency isn't, fluency or not stuttering isn't this thing you can directly target, but it's things you can get as a side effect of removing other baggage sort of around speaking.
So you've spoken directly to one of the questions I asked at the start, which, why might this happen? Why might we see, even though we're not working on fluency, why do we sometimes see it? And I have a working theory around spontaneity that is untested and unverified. So I don't want any of the listeners to take this as truth, but it's sort of how I think about stuttering and speaking and spontaneity and fluency and how they might all be connected. So I'm just going to say it and preface it by saying I have no evidence for it, but I'm curious to see what you two make of it. And my theory is that, and this borrows a lot from the sports science literature, that when you look at complex motor patterns or procedures, that when you're learning a complex motor pattern, you have to use a lot of working memory, that because you don't know it yet, right? It's not yet stored procedurally. You have to concentrate a lot on it. But once you learn it, you actually want to concentrate less on it. You want it handled procedurally rather than through conscious attention. And when you concentrate on it, you see performance decrease because it shifts the action from procedural memory to working memory. And this is often called choking, right? You see this happening when a professional basketball player takes a foul shot, right? A foul shot's an easy shot. They can make that in practice 99 out of 100 times, and they'll miss it quite a bit during NBA game. And my theory is that perhaps what stuttering does fundamentally when we feel like we're stuck, when we get that feeling of loss of control, is it shifts speech from the procedural system to the conscious system. It shifts it from procedural memory to working memory. And we're just not able to handle it well in working memory. And therefore, we struggle, and it actually triggers disfluencies. And so by lessening the amount we're thinking about it, by lessening the attention we give to it, we keep more of our talking in our procedural system. And not only do we struggle less, but we may actually stutter less. And that's my sort of operating hypothesis underneath that hopefully eventually I can test out.
So in that hypothesis, Chris, it wouldn't mm-hmm. even just be that the less you try to be fluent, maybe the more fluent you are, but taking it sort of the next step of the less you actually think about the huttering, the more fluent you are?
I think so, but I don't think it's that easy because I think stuttering makes you think about it, right? Like right. You experience that feeling. I'm almost reducing stuttering to that internal feeling, and you feel that, and your body reacts in an automatic way, and then you're stuck. And when you're stuck, you have to think about it, right? That's how you get unstuck. And so, you know, you can't just tell somebody ignore your stuttering, right? This takes
sure.
It takes time to react to that feeling in different ways that don't lead to getting stuck and then eventually reacting less and less and less.
One of the things that you've said to me, Chris, and this was, I mean, years ago, but it has always stuck with me, was that sometimes that you found stuttering to be fun, that like having a word being stuck actually felt good. And correct me if I'm just putting words in your mouth. But
he has said that.
Like that's verified. It's really cool. And I think that probably like going along with this the theory you have. That's like one step past just being able to tolerate it and getting stuck and being like. Okay, but to actually enjoy that place, I wonder if that's I don't know if it's a generalization to say that everyone needs to get there, but I wonder what would change if everyone did.
Go on, Seth.
Well, I was just sort of gonna build off what what Karen said, and I think your idea of choking is a good one. But I think there's also a caveat that Tiger Woods, you know, he knows how to swing a golf club fluently, to work a better word. So that, right, like, yes, someone like that who has that very well established internal model of what it's like to swing a golf club really well, sure, they can choke. I think the open question with stuttering, and this gets more into speech motor control theory, is whether your speech motor control patterns or my speech motor control patterns or Karen's really are ever well established in the first place. So I think it's a hard thing to tease apart, right? But in the end, I think your final hypothesis actually is the same, where that, yes, it's very likely that when we talk, yes, it just requires more cognitive attentional resources, so that when those are pulled away in other ways, you know, sure, it's a higher chance of things going wrong. This actually overlaps a lot with my dissertation, which is funny that we're coming at this from different angles. But I like Karen's thought too about what the practical implications of, just being okay in the moment. You know, you, Chris, have used the word fun, and I'll verify that, yes, you have said that. And I'm not sure that I'd ever say that being in a moment of stuttering is fun, but I think I would agree, and I think for myself anyway, that talking is easiest when I can react negatively to the least amount that I can, right? So, like, you know, when I feel that loss of control in my speech, you know, really the best you know, I say that in quotes, and this is a podcast, so I'm using finger quotes right now. No one can see. You know, the best sort of outcome really is for me to react as little as possible and just let stuttering happen, right? But maybe that's just spontaneity for me and not everyone.
Yeah, I think that idea of reacting as little as possible in my mind is analogous to keeping speech in the procedural system as much as possible, right? Like not trying to take conscious control over this thing that is really difficult to control. I think sometimes we have to, right? Like if you're still getting stuck in blocks, right? I think how you get out of that block is through attention, through working memory, right? But if you're not yet stuck, you're sort of stumbling, you feel it, you're starting to prolong or repeat or what have you. I think there's a moment, at least this is my experience. I don't know if maybe you guys can tell me if you relate to it. There's a moment where I sort of choose what's going to happen next. And if I lean into the stutter, if I decide, you know, this is fine, I don't have to do anything here, just let it happen, or let me just keep saying the word. Let me go on to the next sound in the word. If I can react as little as possible, I find the stutter, I don't have to deal with it, right? I don't get that stuck feeling. But if I try to prevent it from happening, if I try to diminish it, then that's when I'm like, okay, now I'm stuck. Now I got to work my way out of being stuck. And then I got to keep talking.
Silence because we're thinking, right? Yeah. Not because we disagree.
I don't know if I experience it quite like that. I don't know. I mean, I do think that there are choices that I make and that I can make. As I go to speak and how I approach stuttering and how I approach spontaneity. There are certainly days there I want to avoid more or speak less. But I'm not sure. I guess to me, the choice is always, do I want to say what I really want to say, or is it not worth the fight right now? More so in different ways to actually say the word or the sound.
Right. So you're talking at more like the language level than the speech level.
Yeah. I don't know if I've ever been aware enough to be thinking of it on the speech level, or I'm not even sure if I feel like I have a choice in that.
Right. How about you, Seth?
You know, I'm not sure. You know, I guess I'm more like you, Chris, where I can, like, how I think about stuttering, how I think about moments of stuttering, is, you know, what can I control on a fundamental level versus what I can't? You know, so most of what I would consider that really has limited me in the past, and what limits I think a lot of stutterers, is the negative thoughts, feelings, behaviors that they layer on top of this feeling of loss of control. So I think there's a lot that stutterers can do, where they can learn to react more neutrally, right? But, you know, that said, I don't think that there's anything at all I can do to to stop experiencing moments where I feel like I'm slipping on a sidewalk, walking down the street in the winter with my speech, right? Like that loss of control is always there. So, you know, sure, I can hide it and mask it, but on a fundamental level, you know, yes, I stutter. So my brain is wired to do this thing. You know, so I think that's as close as I can get to just, you know, being me, right? Because it is me. You know, I can't change how my speech and language areas are wired, right? I can change what I layer on top of that.
It's interesting though, Chris, to hear you say that, like, you choose to sort of lean in, because I think that with time, I certainly lean in way more than I once did, but it doesn't feel like a choice. Like going off of Seth's analogy, if I was slipping before, I might panic and freeze up and get really stiff. And when I fall, it might really, really hurt. Versus now, when I'm stuttering or slip, my reaction to that isn't the same. But I've never thought about, like, well, I could push back here, or I could sort of just let it come out.
So I think I'm on Chris's side in this, right? Where I think...
Okay, wait, I don't think it's side. Yikes.
No. Not to team up on Karen. No, but I think that I can choose how to react in that moment. You know, you said lean in. You know, I can push, like when I sense that I'm slipping in my speech, in that split second, I can, you know... like I can consciously decide to push, right? Or not, right? So I think I agree with Chris in that, like, you know, yes, there's things sort of long-term you can do, but there's also things short-term that you can do or not.
But there's also times where you don't choose, right, Seth? Like there's times, like, way back in your past, you used to automatically push. And now... that might not be, like, it's not like you choose as much as sometimes you just don't push.
Well, so I think in years past, your pushing was just such a deeply ingrained habit, you know, that when moments of stuttering happened, that's what I did, right? So I think habits can be very deeply ingrained where they encroach on being automatic, yet on a fundamental level, there's still reactions and things that are learned, right? So I think that's the difference.
Yeah, I think this is very much a process, right? That I couldn't always just choose that, right? That my choices have changed over the years, where my choice maybe used to be, do I restart this word or do I block, right? And then once I was able to consistently pick block, then my choice was, do I block or do I allow some kind of sound to come out? And then once I was getting some sound out, it's like, do I allow just a random ah to come out, or can I get the sound of the word I want to say to come out? Right. And so my choices over time have become more and more choosing to just say the sound how I would say it if I wasn't stuttering. But that was years of other choices that were much more resembling, I think, what people think of when they think of stuttering.
That's a really nice way of saying that. And I think it actually helps frame why therapy is so hard, because it's really hard to change those very deeply ingrained reactions, right? Like, we learned to push from years of pushing, right? So, like that's a hard thing to unlearn.
I'm still not sold, Chris.
I know it. That's why you're here.
That's why she's incredulous.
I'm not. And I don't know if maybe I'm not to the point that you are. So maybe it's hard for me to believe that. But I know the experiences that I've had, and I think because I'm in this field and stuttering such a big part of my life, I think about, like, when I'm in a block, I can think about, like, the next sound I want to make, where my articulators need to be, and I can actively reduce the tension that I have or the amount that I push. But sometimes, no matter what's going on, I can't actively move my articulators to the next position. And I don't think it's necessarily, and I'm gonna say easy, but I know that's not the right word because nothing about this is easy. But I don't think it's necessarily as easy as making the choice of, I'm going to say the next sound now. I think it's more ingrained than that. I mean, going back to an analogy of slipping on ice. So you start to slip, you're in that loss of control. You can make the choice to just continue to walk, but it doesn't mean that you're not going to fall.
You can pretend you're not slipping.
Yeah.
I get what you're saying. I think in my mind, in the analogy, I'm in a car and you can choose, like, you can turn the steering wheel in the direction you're slipping to realign the wheels and get some grip, or you can panic or try to turn the direction you want to turn, and that obviously doesn't work. But I get what you're saying, and I think the reason why your opinion is so valuable to me is because you're a person who stutters, you're a speech language pathologist, you're getting your PhD in stuttering. I trust your self-analysis a lot. And I also think, and I think this gets to a question that I had, is why does this seem to happen with some people? Why does fluency seem to increase for some people, not for others? And I think if what I was describing that's been happening to me was a possibility for everybody, that you would see it more often, right? I don't know how to talk about it because, like, I don't want to take credit for it, right? And I guess why I value your opinion is because I think that you're not somebody who I would say, you just don't know how to stutter properly, right? Like, it's
would you tell anyone that?
Oh, I tell people that all the time. No, I'm just kidding. But, like, I mean, you know, there's when we have these conversations, why I think they're so difficult is underlying them is how much of struggle is your fault, right? How much of struggle is how you're reacting, right? And so, I think having people who have different experiences with how much their stuttering has changed over the years makes you realize that your experience might not be universal, right? That just because something happened to you maybe means that doesn't necessarily mean it can happen to somebody else.
Right. Except that what you're experiencing, Chris, like, has happened to other people.
Right. That's what we talked about at the way beginning. And so, but it does have, right. It's not just my experience. It's obviously happened with others, but it doesn't appear to be a universal stutterer experience.
Right. Although, is it not universal because, I mean, just because it's not universal, that doesn't necessarily mean that it couldn't be. We don't know how much of your experience is due to the things that you've done and the experiences that you've had and what you've done to work on your communication.
Right. Seth, you never answered the question from the beginning. Do you think your fluency has changed?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I did.
Maybe you did and I missed it.
So I would for sure say that generally over the years, I think I stutter less now than I used to. But, well, let me qualify that. I think just in terms of frequency, like how often do I experience moments of stuttering? I think that's largely the same. But I think those moments of stuttering are easier. The struggle is less. And also, everything else I'm doing on top of stuttering is less. So I think if you did a pure fluency count on a 13-year-old Seth versus, oh my gosh, I'm 33-year-old Seth, I don't think that would really change that much, but it's all of this other stuff that I think would. Yet I have had people, within my own family who have said, oh, you don't stutter as much as you used to, which really I think they mean is that talking's easier, right? Not that actually it's occurring less than it used to, but.
Right. If you have smaller stutters, it's not occupying their attention as much as it used to if you used to have much longer, more struggled stutters.
Right. Or if I was, certainly when I was younger, I was much more limited and negatively impacted by my stuttering. So, that also, I think, goes into how people who are on the outside who don't stutter qualify severity.
Yeah. It sounds like you're saying something very similar to what Karen has experienced.
Well, I mean, I think my experiences, really parallel yours as well, in that, yes, I think talking is much easier, right? Like certainly I don't struggle to talk like I used to. And yes, a lot of that comes from things that I've done, trying to reduce all these negative reactions I've had. But I think as a side effect of that is, I think you just, when I encounter small little hiccups, slips in the sidewalk in my speech, that, lots of them go right past me and I don't even notice them. Right. So I think that, from what I've heard you talking about, matches your experience too.
Sure. Sure. So I think the last thing I want to talk about is that I think many people who approach therapy from our perspective, and I'm going to generalize. So if you disagree with this sentiment, tell me. Often feel that fluency, focusing on fluency, can get in the way of a lot of therapeutic progress, that if fluency remains a goal, that it'll be very difficult for people who stutter to stutter openly, to let their stutters happen, to let go of a lot of their tension and apprehension, that as long as they're comparing their speech to fluent speech, stuttering is going to remain more difficult than it could be. And so often, at least I know in my therapies, I take fluency off the table completely, right? We're not working on fluency. We're not aiming for fluency. we're aiming for spontaneity, regardless of how much stuttering is in our speech. And would you agree with that up until this? Would you agree with that premise?
I absolutely do. And I'd also like to play the devil's advocate, if I could, Chris.
Please.
I want to say again that I absolutely agree with everything you said. And the way that I treat is very, very similar to that. But as we've been having this conversation, I've been thinking about sort of what spontaneous fluency is, and the idea that you're not necessarily trying to be fluent, but that's just sort of how your speech sounds. And I would say that many SLPs that have the goal of getting their clients more fluent, that still is the ultimate goal. I mean, I know when I was younger and I was taught fluency shaping, I was taught with the idea that we're going to practice this enough until this becomes sort of your new way to talk. And then at some point in time, you will have more spontaneity in your speech because you've practiced it so much. I think it fits into your idea of joking too. You sort of drilled this new way to talk to such an extent that it doesn't require any thought. And while that's not what I do and not what I would preach for someone else to do, it seems like the end goal is kind of the same, right?
In that both have spontaneity as the end goal.
Right.
Yes. I think the reason why, at least the reason why I don't do therapy that way, is I think the evidence that that ever becomes spontaneous for most people is thin, right? And even that the second it does become spontaneous, it might stop working.
Yeah.
Right.
But I'm also wondering how thin the evidence is that the more you embrace your stuttering, the more fluent you will be.
That, I think, is the question I wanted to circle around to, right? Because one, I don't think stuttering modification advocates are necessarily aiming for fluency most of the time. So I don't think there's that sort of misrepresentation issue, but you can probably tell that where this conversation is going is, should we be talking about that stuttering modification might lead to fluency? And I would say the story is probably very similar to fluency shaping in that it probably works for some people, right? Some people who use fluency shaping, it seems like, become spontaneously fluent, right? And
from the outside, at least, like, that's the thing you don't know, right?
Well, we'll take their word for it, right? just for the sake of this conversation.
Okay, fair enough.
And so we have anecdotal evidence from people who stutter that they've done fluency shaping and now they no longer stutter and they don't think about their techniques anymore because they've become automatic. And so is that anecdotal evidence any different from the anecdotal evidence of my experience or Walt's experience or anybody else who approached their stuttering from the other direction and eventually became more fluent? Right. And I'd say it's probably not, right. It seems that some people who stutter get more fluent, and maybe it doesn't matter the way they do it. And we don't really understand why.
Yeah. But if you had known that from the start, would you have still ended up in the same place?
That is I think that's the question I find most interesting, because that's where I was going to lead this. Is the reason I don't mention fluency to my clients ever is I have this superstitious belief that if you want to be fluent, you will never be, right? That if any part of you is hanging on to that, it's going to prevent you from stuttering openly. And so in my mind, we're going to work on stuttering as easily as possible. And perhaps you'll stay the same frequency of stuttering, but it'll be much easier and much less effortful for you to speak. Or perhaps you might stutter less than you do now, and it'll also be much easier and much less effortful for you to speak. But I don't bring that up at the start because I worry about leading them in the wrong direction. And I don't know if that's right, because maybe fluency would be motivating, right? Like maybe that would keep more people in therapy for longer. I don't know.
We may have different clients who come to us for therapy, because I feel like I've never had someone who's come to me for therapy who doesn't, or who one already hasn't tried, you know, fluency focused therapies and have them not worked, or still want fluency focused therapies. So I find it really interesting that you're saying that you have these blank slate sort of people.
Well, I tell them off the bat that I don't have fluency to offer.
Yeah. See, and right,
I don't have the capability of making you fluent. Right?
Sure.
That's something I cannot do.
Yeah. Well, while you were talking, I was thinking more about, you know, whether the people who gain spontaneity, you know, through fluency or through stuttering modification. Well, let me rephrase that. Because I was really only considering it one way. For the people who have tried more fluency focused therapy and had it not worked, like myself, for example, you know, really, I don't think that I would have been able to gain the spontaneity that I have now had fluency therapy not worked for me in the first place. But I'm not sure if that works in the other direction. Mostly just because I've never experienced having fluency shaping work for me.
Right. So you had to get that out of your system.
Right. Exactly.
You had to try it.
Right. You know, I feel like most people I talk to are in that camp. And I've never met someone who, like, you know, who tried stuttering mod and then found fluency shaping to work. But maybe those exist. I just haven't met them.
I'm really interested, Chris, into what you said about sort of like what we can promise or like superstitious wise of like what we can or should say. And I'm thinking, I mean, obviously just for myself, I think because fluency growing up was always the main goal, I think if I had known that being more accepting of stuttering and stuttering easier could maybe lead to more fluency, I think certainly it would have pushed me to give it a solid try. But I also think that any stuttering that was left, I would then take that as I still failed.
Yeah. I think that's what I'm worried about.
Yeah. Although this might be a little bit of a stretch. So just go with me for a second year. I've been really interested into intuitive eating over the last few months. And I've read a decent amount about it. And the idea being that dieting doesn't work. And that the more you go into it with the main goal of I'm doing this so I can lose weight, it works for a short period of time. And then statistically, people tend to gain back whatever they lost plus more, which to me feels very, very similar to stuttering. You sort of do these things to then be more fluent, and they might work for a short period of time. And then ultimately you're left kind of feeling worse.
Right. Because not only do you still stutter, but you failed at.
Yeah.
Your attempt at this.
And sort of the way that intuitive eating has gone about it, and I can see some similarities here, is the idea that like the main goal is to be healthy and to feel good about food and not carry that like stress and shame and guilt, and eating the foods that sort of are good for you and then make you feel good. And we've seen that that once someone does intuitively eat, they tend to lose weight, but not everyone does. Some people intuitively eat and actually gain weight. So we don't really know, but it seems like once you sort of give up the desire to control, a lot of people tend to sort of lose weight, which seems like it's kind of the same thing. We can't say 100% that if you embrace stuttering and lean into stuttering, that the amount of stuttering will go down, but it might.
I think that's a really interesting analogy. So to try to flesh it out, what you're saying is we can help you feel better about your stuttering, just like we can help you feel better about your eating, right?
Yeah.
Some people who do that might lose weight.
Right.
And some people who do that might stutter less.
Right.
But we can't guarantee that.
Right. But even if it does not change.
It's still good because now it's no longer a stressful event.
Right.
Well, I feel like, you know, really that sums up what I would consider good stuttering therapy, right? And I think that's what your point is, where like regardless of how you get there, you know, I think the goal of most good stuttering therapy is more effective communication. While limiting how much stuttering negatively affects you. So how you get there, I think, you know, certainly I agree there's different paths for different folks. And I like your analogy of intuitive eating a lot, actually. You should make that your dissertation, Karen.
I'm not going to change my dissertation now.
But you could. But you could.
Don't put those ideas in my head. I'll be doing my PhD for the rest of my life.
So I think what I'm hearing you saying, Karen, is that maybe I don't have to be so superstitious.
Yeah. I mean, so yes. And I also think sort of similar to what Seth said, I think that everyone's sort of in their own place. And I don't think that I would have tried in intuitive eating until I tried every diet and saw how they don't work.
Exactly, right?
Was the possibility of losing weight something that helped you be interested in intuitive eating?
Yes, but also it seemed like well, I've tried everything else.
But if everybody who did it was like, yeah, I feel good about food, but I haven't lost any weight, do you think you still would have been interested in it?
Yeah. I mean, that still sounds really, really nice, right?
Yeah. Okay. I just wanted to finish fleshing out the analogy.
I mean, but yeah, I mean, I think that it's the exact same for stuttering. If someone could have explained to me when I was in junior high, that I could live the way that I live now and that I can be comfortable with the way that I speak, like that would sound great. But if someone also said that, like, I can teach you tools and make your stuttering go away, I would have been interested in that too.
Would your middle school self have chosen the make stuttering go away or the other one? Well, yeah. See, and that's my point, right? So I'm strongly suspicious that, you know, a spontaneity really only happens once you've tried and failed not to stutter, right? You know, and I feel like not having that failing experience first, like, I feel like you would always choose the, well, this option sounds way better because it'll work.
So right? Are you saying I should do fluency shaping with all my young kids?
I'm not saying that you should do fluency shaping with young kids. You know, I feel like, you know, we as therapists, and I'm speaking very generally, I feel like we need to be clear about what fluency shaping can and can't do, you know? And I think having that very frank and open discussion will help frame the word fluency really in more helpful terms. You know, like Karen said, and certainly as I've experienced it, you know, sometimes stuttering is just hard and you don't want to do it that day. You know, that should be allowed. Who am I to take away that from someone? You know, so I think, you know, someone having that choice is certainly up to them, but I'm not giving them this magic pill that will take this condition away. Right. Well, and I think that's the difference.
I also wonder, Seth, like, yeah, when I was in junior high, I probably would have picked making my stuttering go away as if that was a choice. But I also didn't really, I was never exposed to what the other choice was because I never really was told that stuttering was fine.
So that's a fair point.
If we can reinforce that at a younger age, then maybe people don't have to try to get fluency and then fail before they're ready to try something new.
So I totally agree with that. Certainly my experience as a kid was the exact same. I didn't even know, you know, that these other choices and ways of living were options. You know, but again, I don't know, and this is a big, I don't know, you know, if later in life, whether I could have done what I've done having first had those negative experiences, right? Like that's the unknown for me.
Yeah, I think I see. So my sort of journey with stuttering was when I was younger, I tried fluency shaping, it didn't work. And then I just completely abandoned any sort of work on my speech, right? Like I'm just going to speak and I'm going to talk and try to feel comfortable doing it. And I think that led to like 5 years of confidently struggling a lot, right? Just keeping a stiff upper lip and talking when I wanted to talk, but like definitely didn't know how to stutter any easier than what I was doing. And then I entered the field of speech pathology and I started learning about speech. And that's when I realized that, oh, I think I can probably change some of this, right? I think I could stutter differently than how I am. And I definitely think those past experiences of trying to be fluent and then getting fairly okay with just this really struggled stuttering probably set me up to do stuttering modification easier. I don't know that it was necessary, right? Like I don't know that I had to have those past experiences in order to stutter easier, but they probably helped.
Yeah. Well, what we need is some like massive randomized control trial, right? With like with like longitudinal children therapy to really tease this apart. It's a really interesting question, right? You know, because certainly like we're all humans. We bring our past experiences to the therapy table, right? Some of those help us in therapy. Some of those don't, you know, certainly are they necessary? Probably not. But like you, Chris, said, I don't think having had those negative experiences as a teenager and when I was in high school and college, without having those very negative experiences, I don't think I would have turned towards Stuttering Maud as strongly as I have.
Right. All right. This felt like a therapy session for me. Like I was really trying to process these thoughts I was having about my fluency. And you guys have been super helpful. I feel pretty good about myself now. So thank you. Before we hang up, do you guys have any last things you want to add? I'll start with you, Karen.
I don't think I do. I still have a lot going on in my brain right now. I'm going to have to think about this all for the next few days.
What are your lingering questions you want to leave for the listeners to ponder?
I don't know. I'm still trying to like come to grips with like what I even think. I don't know if my overall views have changed after this talk, and maybe they have. I don't know.
Really effective therapy session we just had.
Well, I feel good. I don't care how Karen feels.
Gee, thanks, Chris. I don't really know. I think that I think that to me the ending is just that we don't really know. It seems like everyone has different experiences. It seems like stuttering does change to some extent, not necessarily the amount, although it could be. I still think it's really interesting that you just have like longer stretches of spontaneous fluency, because that's just not something that I've ever felt. But that's what you feel, so who the heck knows why?
Seth, any last words?
No, I mean, I feel like maybe not as I was about to say hopeless. That's not the right word. Maybe.
Yeah, that's like for sure not how I feel.
I wasn't going to say that. that's why I stopped myself. I feel like, you know, this conversation has been really helpful because like we're trying to describe this very hard thing in stuttering, right? How do we change the way that we deal with this condition? And I think it's certainly true that there are lots of different pathways. And I feel like the three of us have more similar pathways than dissimilar. Certainly there are variations in our experiences that aren't the same, but I feel like overall the three of us are more similar than not. You know, so I think it's hard really to draw a lot of conclusions on these people that, you know, that are hard to imagine what their experiences are like. Like, I feel like we need to find people who have tried Stuttering Maud and then, you know, found spontaneity through fluency shaping. I want to talk to them. We need to set that conversation up. Because I think contrasting some of these experiences would be helpful.
Although, I mean, I agree, Seth, that like we've had similar experiences in the sense of like what has seemed to help us, but I don't think we've necessarily had similar, I guess, somewhat similar, but we haven't had the same outcomes of doing similar things.
So that's a good point. That's fair. You know, like Chris experiences these periods of just not thinking about stuttering, you know, I think I experienced that to a fair degree, maybe not the degree that Chris does. So I'd for sure agree with what you said. Yes.
But not thinking about stuttering and then just being spontaneously fluent where there actually isn't stuttering in your speech, I don't think are the same.
Well, how do I know if I'm not thinking about it, though?
I've had that thought, too.
Right?
Like, maybe I'm not as fluent as I think I am.
Right. Like, that's the thing. Like, you, like maybe I'm stuttering just as much as I always do. It's just I'm not paying attention to it, and they're small, and I don't care. So I'm just going about my day. Well, but to me, that's still spontaneous speaking, right?
I'm not saying spontaneous speaking. I'm saying spontaneously fluent.
So,
like, what you're saying sounds fluent, feels fluent, without you having to do anything.
So this is actually really interesting, because how I think about spontaneity is I'm not interrupted by moments of loss of control. Whether or not I'm fluent on the outside, I don't care, because it doesn't matter. What matters is whether that sensation of loss of control is interrupting me. So if it's not interrupting me, and I'm spontaneous, right? So maybe spontaneous fluency is a bad word to describe what I'm experiencing, because really I think I'm just, you know, when Chris used the word spontaneous fluency, you know, I wasn't really conceptualizing it in terms of what a listener would classify as fluent or not. I was classifying it more in terms of just, you know, how spontaneous is talking, right? How free, whether or not whether or not moments of loss of control are interrupting me or not.
Right. And I think you can have moments of stuttering that you don't have to attend to.
Sure.
Right. So you can be just because you're speaking spontaneously doesn't mean necessarily that there's no disfluencies in your speech.
Right.
All right. Thank you guys for talking with me about, the hard stuff to talk about. I enjoyed this conversation.
Yeah, same.
Same, Chris.